Hi, these are podcasts provided by LightPath Resources. The website is light-path-resources.org. The provider of this website, Reverend Don Chapin, is one of the main speakers, and I am also an interviewer. My name is Reverend Stu Mann. There are many other speakers on many different topics, and the intention of these podcasts is to connect with people of like minds and like hearts who want to discuss spiritual perspectives on everyday topics and also current event topics that are happening in the world. Thank you. You had this unique experience, which I think, you know, just for you to share would be awesome.
I became interested in the psychic world when I started reading Edgar Cayce. I joined the ARE Foundation at one time, and he had passed away before I had discovered him, but I read many of his books and many of people's books that were written about him. And amongst those books were things about Atlantis and Lemuria and Egypt. And so with all of that, I remember one time reading something about a theory of the pyramids, of how they were built and the different tests that they made with leverage and things to get those huge blocks up there. So I was very interested in all of that. And anything new that came out, I usually read or something. But I had been away from it for some time. And I had another friend who was a writer also. His name was David St. Clair. And he wrote many books also, one of them being Instant ESP. And so with all of that sort of information in my brain, I went to sleep one night, and all of a sudden I was in Egypt.
Okay, now, just let me interrupt you for a minute here. So, just to give people some perspective, what's the kind of time frame you're talking about? From you said your interest in being psychic, and then Edgar Cayce and ARE, and, you know, the different authors. How much, you know, time had elapsed?
Oh, much time.
Like a decade, you know, 1 year,
this,
10 years.
This was steps that I took. I was going by the progress that I made and how I made it at the time. And I would say that in 79, I was in San Diego and found this bookstore that had many of the books that I read. And even to where I read about Ruth Montgomery, who was a journalist who wrote for 4 or 5 presidents, followed them around, went with them, traveled with them, and then she started writing from a spirit world. She went to Arthur Ford's seance, doubtful and suspicious, and came out a believer. And then these spirits started writing through her, and then Arthur Ford passed away, and he continued to write through her. And one of the things that she wrote about were walk-ins, people who took over bodies of people who were just distraught and gave up their bodies. And so what she did was, when she mentioned these walk-ins, she mentioned one particular person that stuck in my mind, because I had a friend who had cancer, and his name was Jason Winters. And Jason Winters had cancer along the side of his face and his jaw and everything. They were going to have to cut half of it away. And he decided to find a cure himself and traveled all over different places and finally ended up with a couple of three T's. And he was so sick and so tired that he just blended them all together and he went into remission. And so he started manufacturing the tea. You can find it today. They have it in Las Vegas. But for a while, they made him leave the country. And in England, they knighted him Sir Jason Winters.
Yeah, the medical industry is a strange beast.
Yeah.
So, okay, in 71, you're going to these occult stores or bookstores, metaphysical bookstores, and reading this stuff. So now, when did you have this dream you started to talk about before I interrupted you?
Oh, this was years later.
Like, that's what I want to give people a perspective of, though. So it's like 20 years later, or 5 years later, or a year later?
79, 89. Maybe 15, 20 okay. years.
All right, so you've been reading about this occult metaphysical topics and subjects for, 15, 20 years. Okay.
Okay. And so, I'm all of a sudden there at the construction site of the Sphinx and the Pyramids. Giza, it was called.
So you're sleeping. All of a sudden, you're like laying in your bed, drifting off to sleep, and then you have this realization.
I was there. But I realized that I wasn't doing past life regression. And, it wasn't age regression. And it wasn't past life. It was like I never lived at that time. I was just there as a spectator.
Yeah. So you're like real. You're there real time. It's vibrant. It's a very lucid experience. And yeah. Since you're a self-hypnosis person, you have all these thoughts in your brain. Am I having a past life experience or regression? And you're talking to yourself, going, "Nope, not. I never had a past life here." So.
No, I didn't. I didn't talk to myself too much about at that point about. Where I was at or why I was there. I was just there and observing. And what I saw were, first of all, people who looked very much alike, and they all wore light green uniforms.
Like a one-piece uniform?
I'm sorry, uniform isn't the word. It was more like a one-piece overalls, the coveralls.
Oh, like farmer jeans?
Yeah.
With the straps on the top?
It was a whole body was covered with...
Oh, okay, one-piece, okay.
Yeah, and it was green. The reason for that was, and they told all of this information they told me through communication. It was not through talking. It was through the mind.
Through thoughts.
Yeah.
So you're standing or sitting there observing this while you're sleeping in your body, and they're having a conversation using thoughts with you.
Yes.
Okay.
They know that I'm visiting and I'm curious. And so they're telling me these things. And the first thing they told me was that everybody helped everybody else, and that all of the people that were there to make something happen for that time. And what it was the construction of the Sphinx and the Pyramids. What I saw was a long line of camels coming from the Nile, coming and going. And what they were doing, they would have two large sacks on either side of them. And as they walked into the area, there would be huge crates, and they would go up a ramp over the crate, and they would pull an opener at the bottom of these bags that let all of this granite and pumice come out and go down into the crates. When the crate was full, they stuck little rods into it and threw a form of solar paneling, you might call it, and they use mirrors to reflect it and to increase it. The solar panels solidified this granite and they became rocks.
So it was a powder. So the camels had the powder of the minerals in their sack, and then they dumped it into these crates. And then once the crates were full, they filled up. When you say rods, was it like a steel rod, you know, like what,
yes,
a rebar kind of deal?
Yeah, it was like antennas, but stuck into the ground. And the idea was that within 3 to 6 months, those areas would harden, like it would take thousands of years for it to harden in the earth. It was the same thing. So that's why people, when they see those blocks, they think that how did they move them? They didn't move them. They poured them. They made them right where they were. In each of the temples, there's two temples at the paws of the Sphinx. And in each temple, there's a 200 ton or 20, I can't remember now, block. And
underneath the paw, you mean? Is that what you're saying?
In the temple. These blocks are in the temple, and it would be practically impossible for anyone to move them because there's not enough space in there to get leverage or to get enough people in there to move them. They're that heavy. And what I also learned after going back, you know, I've gone back numerous times now to that time. And one of the things that I learned was about the records. And Edgar Cayce talked about these records, that they were hidden and nobody knew where they were. And the reason that they were hidden was because they were afraid that the wrong people would find them and use them to harm the world instead of helping it.
Records about like how to make the process they use? Would that be one of the records?
No. It was just... These records were how to save the world.
Huh?
And
maybe different uses of energy or...
Well, whatever they were, nobody knows about them. Edgar Cayce knew about them and talked about them, but only as information. He didn't know really what was going on. And he went back in time to where he was Ra, who was one of the first.
Mm.
But he was very disturbed about that because Ra was a womanizer, and Edgar Cayce read the Bible every day or every year. For the rest of his life, he read the Bible all the time. So he was really programmed to the religion thing.
But in your experience, okay, so this was a lucid, very real experience that you had about being with these people in the green suits and watching the camels come to and fro and dumping this mixture of the minerals into the crates and filling up, and then they use that process of the solar panels and reflecting the sun to melt the minerals.
Yeah. And pumice was one of the things that I was told, and the reason for the pumice comes from, it comes from, maybe you know, volcanoes, and there were many eruptions around, and pumice floats more or less, and so it was floating on the water. And so they just had to go around and get it, and bring it, and mix it with the granite. And for some reason, they knew to do that. And then this granite would harden, just like they would do with cement, only with water. But they didn't use water. They used a whole other process. And then along that line, I found out where the records were. I went back one time and asked him about the records. And here's what they told me. When the two blocks, huge blocks, were placed in the temple and hardened there, that as they started to fill it, they first put in urns that had the papyrus in them with the records. So this is where the records are, in these two blocks.
They're buried.
They're not buried. They're at the temples, which are just in front of the pause.
Oh, in front of the pause, okay.
And they're right out there. But the thing is, how do you get to it? You could break the blocks and hope to get the papyrus out, or you could turn them on its side and then go from the bottom, and there's only like a foot of granite there, and then you would hit the urns and you could pull them out from the bottom. These are all theories that they gave me.
Right.
And so I felt that the thing that was bringing me there, since I didn't feel that I lived at that time, was what they call astral travel. And I talked to Don about that, and he said, that's what you were doing. I was astral traveling. It's like another form of, I guess, through self-hypnosis, going somewhere. You know, it's like I astral travel when I go back to the island. I call it Treasure Island only because my two friends are there and I'm happy when I'm there. So.
Happy places are good.
What's that?
Happy places are
good. Oh, absolutely. And so this wasn't really self-hypnosis, but it was like I've incorporated all of them into my practices of meditation, self-hypnosis, visualization. All of that works for me. And, you know, I'm sure that there are people that think I'm nuts, and that's their problem, not mine. And, you know, I don't mind telling it to anybody. I mean, not that it's their problem, but that telling them about the Giza and my feelings, my experience.
Yeah, because you're sharing an authentic experience. You're sharing an authentic experience.
Yeah.
You're not trying to get them to believe anything.
Right, exactly. And in my writings, I say that, too.
Hey, you mentioned you had a book. What is it published? Your book is published or not?
I have a book that's published.
What's that called?
Cancel Christmas.
Cancel Christmas? Okay.
But that was a play I wrote. And
oh,
and produced, and then other people produced it, and so.
I meant the other book that you mentioned.
Oh, yeah.
That's not published?
No.
Okay.
I haven't published any of that.
Well, thanks for sharing your experience, Sam. This has been really, really good. And, it's fun to share experiences that are more than the ordinary day-to-day stuff. And your experience of traveling in that time, and it's fascinating.
There's one thing that I wanted to add to that, and that was sort of hanging me up. And that is that when those people talked to me and communicated with me in the green outfits, why, they told me things about how they controlled life or not controlled it. And that whenever anyone got put into an office and they started to react differently than what was expected of them, they were removed immediately. There wasn't any question of, if there was any kind of thing that were done corruptively, they were cured right away. They didn't wait and let people...
You're talking like a political officer.
Exactly.
In a community-type leadership office.
Yes. And the reason for all of the green outfits were there was just one place, one manufacturer that manufactured all of these clothes, and the idea was to keep everything the same so that tons of clothing weren't wasted like we have today with the different styles and things like that. So I felt that was important. Just the fact that they kept things on an even keel. They did not allow anyone to become corrupt within their offices.
That in itself is an amazing feat.
Exactly.
Amazing accomplishment.
Exactly.
I mean, for that many people, the number of whatever people they have in their community to be that aligned and say, okay, this is the way it's going to be, and then do that together. I mean, that's, we live in a fragmented world here.
Well, one of the things was that these people were all of the same mind. And they helped each other, and they did what they, well, not what they were told. That's not,
you're saying they lived in a harmonious state, and that was their main objective, living in harmony.
Yes.
So when you say one mind, first that scares me, and I think, oh my God, everybody's the same, but everybody can be of one mind in harmony and still have different ideas and pursuits and things.
Oh, sure.
The first objective is living in harmony.
Well, that's true, because if everybody were the same, then they probably never would have built the Sphinx and the pyramids.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah. And I remember when the Grateful Dead went over. I knew the Grateful Dead fairly well. And I knew when they went to Egypt. And when they came back, they told me some things. And one of them was they went into one of the pyramids and tried to record their music in there, and they couldn't do it. They couldn't make the sound system work. And I knew the guys real well, the Grateful Dead.
Well, there's a whole podcast in itself talking about the pyramids. And, I've read a few books on those. But anyway, this has been really great. Anything else?
You mean another subject?
No. Okay. That's it for today.